I didn't enjoy it. I can't understand. But that is what love is. I want to go a little bit further. I've got a person that comes to my Thursday night shield in Palo Alto, and not someone in San Jose. He is a pathologist. And a very good pathologist, there's no question about it, because I know that they're always in touch with him from Stanford, so I know that he's a very good pathologist. One day I had to be in his office, they call it here, in his laboratory, I had to be there. I said to him, Stanley, please, just show me a slide with a healthy cell and not a healthy cell. Oh, mercy, only to please, he's got his microscopes in everything. He wants to take me to a microscope so many thousand times. I said, look, don't turn me there. Just start off with something simpler with me. Bring me only to that state of magnification that I would be able to see it. And yes, he brings it. And it's a lovely microscope. Until then, the only microscope I've looked through has got only one. This has got two. And I look, shows me. It's a healthy cell. And it's stained. You can't go wrong. He said, this is it. I couldn't see the difference. A microscope? Well, you've got to have a pathologist to look through a microscope. I look through a microscope. I want to tell you this. I can tell on the face of a person who is learning Torah, not in a great way, but if he's learning it properly, he's learning it well. I can feel it on the face of the person. One develops microscopic eyes. I can tell it on the face of the person. What Torah does do this? But I don't feel anything. You don't feel it. Of course you don't feel anything. Pollution you don't feel. So what you can then feel this? Certainly you don't feel. And not feeling what it does to the person. Sometimes you say, well, it's made a difference to my life. Made a great difference to my life. So you realize it. But to feel what it does takes a long, long time before one begins to feel it. But that is what Torah does to a person. That is what Torah does. I want to take it even a little bit before, a little bit beyond this. There is a long piece of Gemara, and the Gemara goes through some very interesting things. The Gemara says that, before I come to that, I'd rather give you something else, also that we will really discuss it. I told you how it worried me once when I went to an insurance agent, and he started the insurance wanted to assure me how long my father lived, my grandfather, my father there. Why? What do you know? Then you know how long you're going to live. what's that got to do with it? If I'm good, I'll live longer. Well, I'll live as long as Hashem wants me to live. I said, look here. But the Torah says that the manager of the Sun Life, he was, says to me, and he's a member of my congregation in Johannesburg, he said, look here, please. In shul, work with Torah. But here, when you come here, we work with statistics. And he shows me, he says, this building belongs to us. Look out there, it's a big skyscraper. Belongs to the Sun Life here. That whole building. I said, where did you get from the money? He says, oh, from people like you, whose grandparents lived till 100 years, 99. That's from where we get our money. Statistics. He said, it's no good. He said, you can't argue with figures. These are the things of what you're arguing about. I said, well, there must be something wrong somewhere. So what do you do? Go to the Torah. Start looking. You must find in the Torah. So what do I find in the Torah?
I find in the Torah
there's
something that's very, very... Find the Mishnah.
Mishnah says as follows. Idris. Mishnah says as follows. Mishnah says, Ho'ov Zochelet Vein Benoi, a father gives over to his son, knowing his physical appearance. Looks nice. He looks nice. Fine appearance. Oh, I think we're beginning to understand a little bit. I had a cousin that was very, very handsome. His father was also handsome. I was never handsome. He was fine. Inherited. Right. It's not my fault. Yes. The chalach. Physical strength. Got it from his father. Ocean, wealth, of course. Wealth, the person who has Chochmah makes me feel a little bit better. I have a very great friend, Joe Levine. Our whole lives have been together. Joe Levine, what took me 3 weeks, he did in 3 hours. What he understood immediately, I had to work on for 3 hours. Wonderful brain. He used to wonder, he's got such a wonderful brain, I haven't. His father, it's true, his father also had a brain like that. Quite true. Oh. Uwe Shoni, and even years longevity, so he's right. Here he's right. Yes, the mighty is right. It is. It says so. So the manager is right, and Lahavdil the Tony is right, or the Tony is right, and Lahavdil the manager is also right, and I'm not the one that was wrong. I didn't know the Mishnah. So the Mishnah is right.
The Mishnah has a red statistics.
So what is it all about? So what is it all about? Start looking at this. It says Ho'ov Zelche Leben. It doesn't say Mezaka Leben. It says he is Zelche Leben. The father is Zelche for it, and he's got it. Not only for himself, but for his son also. How do we
know?
Zelche, he has that thing. Merits.
Zohar, he has it, and Mezaki would be that he causes his son to have
it.
He gets it. The fact that his son has a long life is something as a reward for the father.
No. Zohar means I acquire it.
Yeah.
He acquires it. He acquires it for his son. But do I acquire wisdom for my son? to acquire my physical beauty, not to imagine I was beautiful, I was handsome, I acquired it for my son.
What do I need for my son? The whole thing became so clear.
And afterwards I began to understand it, and I used to, then I began finding it everywhere. I found it everywhere. Each person is born for a purpose. Every person is born for a purpose. But my child is born for the same purpose as I am born. It goes over. It goes over. It's not that I'm born for a purpose. But my child is also, that purpose for which I am born goes over. It might express itself in altogether a different form. But it goes over. I've got to have the tools for what I do. I get that from my father. My father's got it. Now, I tell you that Stanley Levine looks through the microscope and he understands. He's got microscopic eyes. When you learn Torah, you remember Torah microscopic eyes. I have actually seen it in three, four generations where our fathers had something. And it was all good, though it remained in the child. The child didn't seem to show anything, but to me it was obvious that it was in the child, but it was never applied. It was applied in the next generation, and in the following generation it comes out in the child. So it sometimes happens that all the father is there for is to preserve it. Is there only to preserve it?
To transmit.
To transmit it, and the other, but to, he's got to transmit it, and the other one there that gets it. Not that he, but he's got to, because he's got to transmit it still. And so it goes on. That's what the Mishnah says.
And that's why it's Zoche.
He is Zoche for it. But it's for itself for what comes afterwards. But every person has got a purpose in life. And now the final word we've got for this part. According to the Sforim HaKadosh, what is the purpose of everyone that we've got? Everyone's got a purpose. Now, I'm doing the same with you as I did with Salmut Torah Keneged Kulam. I'm not giving you the sermon that I used to give from the Johannesburg pulpit, but I'm giving to you what I can speak to you about. In the Johannesburg pulpit, I said, everybody is born for a purpose. This is body is born to be a doctor. Well, that's his contribution. This person is born to be a scientist, that is his contribution. This person is born to be a teacher, that's his contribution. That's not what it is. Hashem is in this universe. The universe is called Olam, which means Him. It doesn't mean that the universe is mysterious. For that you don't have to be told the Torah for that. Of course it's mysterious. Don't need Torah for that. But what Olam means is Hashem is hidden in the universe. He is there, but he's hidden. And the duty of every person is the Hizkalus Hashem. He, in some way or other, has got to bring Hashem out into the open. In some way or other. That is his purpose. Can you take that or can't you take that? That is the purpose of his body. In some way or other, through his propensities, through his talents, and Hashem has given him all the means for it. That's the way he brings it out. There's longevity in my family. But very soon I decided that I would, please excuse me speaking about myself, it's very distasteful and I'm doing it only because I want to bring out a certain point to you. I decided very long, early in my life, that Torah is my contribution must be through Torah. Later I began to understand it much better, what part of Torah, teaching Torah, that's not it. What was it? It was creating Torah personalities. That's my thing. That person, people, should first of all know Torah. Then they should realize what it is. Then they should be able to relate to Torah. And after they can relate to Torah, to live by Torah and with Torah. The stages. Do you think one can do this in 6 lectures on Jewish mysticism? Seven weeks of Talmud. Think you can do that? You think you can do it with one course at university or 2 courses? You can't do it. Need a long time to beat. You need a long time to beat. I take it that the reason for it is longevity. This didn't concern the insurance manager of Sun Life. He wasn't interested in this, but I have to be, I have to understand this. The only reason can be for his longevity. It's for this. For this you need this. Can't do it overnight. Hashem gives it to you.
Or if he must be able.
Riches, wealth, I don't need wealth. We've never had wealth. Our family's never had wealth. You don't need it for that. Don't need it. For that we don't need it. You haven't got it. Fine. It's perfectly normal. A physique? It's not for me. As much as I need it to do my work, that I've got, that Hashem gives. And that applies to each one of us. But it's good to know that what one does is to be Magala Hashem, to bring Hashem out into the universe. It used to worry me also when the first antibiotics came out, that antibiotics, the sulfur drugs, I think those were the first antibiotics that came out. So what is it? What does it mean? Does it mean that once a person got pneumonia and he died, and now a person gets pneumonia and he doesn't die? If that is the case, then where does Hashem come into it? Where does Hashem come into? Until gradually I came to the realization that this is all is Galus Hashem, this is bringing Hashem out. What there all is. Ways of bringing Hashem out. I've got to end here. I listened to an interview of Professor Salk over the television. It was a good interview. It was an excellent interview. And he emerged out of this interview as a very fine person. But as soon as I saw his face, I got a fright. I had seen that face many, many years ago. He had aged tremendously. And it was terribly sad. As soon as the interview started, terribly sad. And the interview went on, I couldn't understand what has he said. At the end of the interview, he started questioning. He said, what is all this that you've studied? What have you learned from it? And he answered immediately, he said, the order of it all. The order. So the questioner took it up and he said, what do you think of religion? And then he started wondering. He had no idea at all. Not only, he didn't have any derech at all, he had no approach at all, nothing at all. He said, do you believe in God? He said, well, we've got to create God in order to have something to believe in. Now, you know, as a scientist, I could never say a thing like that. Because I've been told the Torah way. The Torah way is I deal only with reality. I don't even say there's such a thing as a symbol. A symbol is not reality. I can't work with that. Torah is reality. I work only with reality. Says Salk, you've got to create a God. Got to have it. And you must believe in it. It's that science. Hasn't got that. Then I understood why he was that sad look in his face. No meaning to it all. No meaning to it all. This person that really brings out Hashem in the universe, and when you see what there is in the universe, is this just chance? This is all evidence of Hashem. He is doing it and he doesn't know what he is doing it. What is it in our language? How did we describe this sort of action? What was it?
Kuf Ba'alma.
Masid Kuf Ba'alma. He does it. But it's a Masid Kuf Ba'alma. It's got a reen. It's the same as this monkey that I once knew. As soon as you gave him a newspaper, he quickly ran and took a pair of glasses, put it on, and held it. That's it. It's got no meaning. All this wonderful discovery, it doesn't fit it, it's got no meaning. So he saves lives, prevents disease, for what? What's it all about? What is it all? Life has no meaning. But live it as if it did have meaning. I'm sorry, that's not good enough for me. I must have Torah. Life must have meaning. If it has no meaning, it's not good enough. Then the whole thing isn't relevant. I can't live in a vacuum. I can't live a lie. You're dealing with reality. Every person has got their propensity for himself. Every person has got what he needs for himself. The story is told about Rabbi Yisrael Salanta. I'm finishing already. Stories about Rabbi Salanta had five outstanding Talmidim. each one of these Talmidim was great in a particular direction. And those Talmidim knew that they were great in a particular direction. Once, the youngest of them all was at Naftali Amsterdam. Naftali Amsterdam said to Rabbi Sura Salante in a moment of weakness, I'm sure, he said, Rebbe, if I had Reb Laser Gordon's brain, and if I had Reb Simcha Zissel's midos, his attributes, and if I had Reb Note Hirsch's purity, and if I had Reb Itzel Petterberger's clarity of thought, what only could I not have done? And we saw it quick as lightning, said, Naftali, with your brain, and with your midos, and with your clarity, and with your character, and what only can't you achieve? Each person has got it for what he needs. Works in his hand. We are learning Torah. Torah cleanses. Part of the cleansing is to help us realize what it's all about. What we are here for. To bring out into the open an expression and a manifestation of the Rebbeinu Shleilah. Bring it out into the world. You know, I've got very little time for all this business. We want Mashiach, 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 Mashiach. You bring Mashiach. You do it. When there is the Galus Hashem, when Hashem is brought out, then is Mashiach, then Mashiach comes. But that's your contribution to do. I don't want Mashiach just to come. I want to make a contribution towards his coming. Coming on earth. That's each one of us is able to do that. Well, thank you very much.
Excuse me, one announcement. If someone would volunteer.
Getting back into our stride again, and I've got to move on to new Gemara today. It's a new Mishnah, it's a new Gemara. I am watching the time carefully, so the shiur is divided into three parts. The first part of the shiur will be the new Gemara, and we just sort of break into that. The second part of the shiur will be Chazoro. There will be revision, and the third part of the shiur will be the talk that I usually have with you for the third part of the shiur. Now we're starting off with the Mishnah on Daf Yud Aleph, Omid Aleph, at the bottom of the page. You remember that we discussed the question of what would be the position if you've got an almona, a grusha, and a chuzo who is a basura. That is, a woman, there is a rusin, and the husband dies, the chosen dies, before there can be nisuin. So she is an almono, she's got the din of an almono. If you don't know the terms, then you just struck me. She's got the deen of an almona. Stuart, you know what an almona is? A widow. She's got the deen of a widow. She's got the deen of an almona. But she didn't live with her husband. Because this was before Nisuin. It was after Kiddushin, but before Nisuin. So the deen, you will remember, is that her kesuba is Mosai. She gets a kesuba of 200. What happens if she is a grusha? From a grusha from the time of Eirusin, Kesuba is 200. What is the position if she is a chlutzo, that she takes chlutzo, that husband dies and she's got to be a Yevama, but it's all from the Erusi, the deen is that she gets a kesuba of Mosaim, of kesuba of 200. Why? Because, as we explained it, she's got a chazoka that a bia didn't take place. There was no bia, so she is a proper basura. So that there was a erusin doesn't make her lose at the kesuba of 200. That is what we covered. Mark, what's worrying you?
Is to all of these you mean where the woman gets Mosaim apply outside Yehuda? Is that correct? Inside Yehuda it would be different?
No. This is all over. This is all over. Don't worry about Yehuda, because that we're going to have in the next Mishnah here on a few days. We're going to get this whole question of Yehuda. Just let's get this straight over like that. Now, this Mishnah continues really on the same and then the next Mishnah, you remember we had a case, what happens if a girl had a bia but she was less than 3 years old, or a girl was a shvuyo, she was a captive, but she was redeemed before she was 3 years old, or a Gentile woman becomes a Jewess when she's less than 3 years old. They all have a kesuba of 200. Is that clear? What we didn't discuss was, I'm coming to you, Charles, what we didn't discuss was, what happens if she, there is a erusin and there is nisuin, there's the wedding, and the husband dies before there can be a bia. He dies immediately after the chuppah. So she's still a basu, she's an almono, but she's an almona from the Nisui. Does she also get a kesuba of 200 because she's a basula or not? Once we say Nisui have taken place. We discussed it because you asked me the questions. You have a knack of asking me questions about Gemaras that we haven't done yet, which is perfectly in order. So I dealt with it just by the way, and then you worried me still more. So I went a little bit further, and you worried me still more, so I told you everything already. But I shouldn't have. Now we are coming to that very part. Charles, what is it that's worrying you?
Did you just
go to the ship? Everybody? The ship goes, I left out one.
That's what I heard.
You leaving
her out.
Yes, fine, you know. It's the least likely one for us to be confronted with. Now, if you give me your attention for this very Mishnah, it says Hagodo Shebo Al Hakatano. If a grown-up man, that's a godo. A godo is a man who is over. He's had his permits already. And please don't make a mistake to say that a godel is had his bar mitzvah, so he's just like he's a grown-up man. He's not. He's not a grown-up man. They say that when they speak to bar mitzvah boys, you're a grown, you're a grown. He's not. He doesn't get punished until he's 20. He doesn't go out to war until he's 20. He's not a grown-up man. But what we say is he's old enough to know that he must do these mitzvahs, and if he doesn't do the mitzvahs, he doesn't get a punishment, not a real punishment, he gets a smack, not something. So of course we make allowances. It's only 20, but when we speak about a godel in these mitzvahs, we mean a godel is after the mitzvah. So how godel shibor like a Milton, what do you want to ask me? So is there anybody else who wanted to ask? I thought I saw a hand go up. Hagodo shebo ala katano. So if a godo comes onto a katano, it's just a euphemistic way of putting it, the cotton shebo ala gadolo. And a cotton, here we are speaking about a cotton of less than 9 years old, it comes on a katano. A girl who, I'm sorry,
the Kotan Shibuala Gedola and the Kotan who comes on a Bagiris, on a grown up girl, Umukas Eitz, and a Mukas Eitz, Kasubosan Mosayim Divrei Rabbi Meir. Their Kasuba is 200. And I've got to explain to you what a Mukas Eitz is. Literally, one who has been hurt by a piece of wood. That means Rashi will explain to us that in that particular spot she was injured with a piece of wood and she lost her basuli. So she hasn't lived with a man, but she hasn't got any basuli. Now there are different ways in which a girl can be mukas eitz, and without having had any association with a man. But that is what mukas eitz is, and I now won't have reason again to translate it, unless somebody forgets. There's no disgrace in forgetting, there's no harm in forgetting. You ask me and I'll tell you a second time, and then you remember. Larry, what's worrying you?
Is the use of that term the general description of all the ways of losing one's virginity outside of relationships with a man, like all the different kinds of injuries?
Yes, that is the term that is used. Mukas Eitz is used. Of course, there are girls who use that as excuses. I'm not speaking about them, but they do come up. Philip, what did you want to say? Being cleared up. All right. So now all these three, the Kesuba, Rabbi Meir says, that the Kesuba is 200, says Rabbi Meir. So, if a Gordon Bo Alakatano, that means that a grown-up person came on a girl who's less than 3 years old. So the Basubin come back. So her Kesuba is 200. A Kotin Shebo Alakadolo, if a person comes on a grown-up woman, she's a Basula. That doesn't make her lose her basulim, and her kasuba is still 200. Umukas Etz really hasn't got any basulim, but she's lost her basulim not through an association with a man. All these three, says Rabbi Meir, their kasuba is 200. Yes?
Rabbi Laban, I don't understand why it's relevant to the state of her basulim if she is a gedola and the man is a katana.
The gedola is a korban. You see, you've got a knack of asking me things that the Gemara deals with afterwards. The korban means that he's less than 9 years old.
Yes.
If he's less than 9 years old, he can't rupture the basulim.
But isn't the question not whether he's going to do it or... Oh, we're talking here about the situation where we're defining who was with her before, you know...
Elliot does, this is not the marriage.
Okay, good.
Before, and then she... I'm sorry, you're quite right, I should have explained that. And after any one of these things have happened, now she wants that she's getting married.
Properly.
And then she's getting married, so her kasuba is 200. I'm sorry, I didn't follow what you meant.
Mm.
Have you got that? Somebody else wanted to ask a question.
I have the same question.
Say that. I'm sorry. I should have explained that. It's speaking now.
I had the same first question.
It's speaking. It might be a year later. It might be 2 years after this has happened. Now she wants to get married. So what is her kasuba? Not to the same person. I hope not. Not to the same person. It's does she get a kasuba of 200 or not? Now,
what would be the circumstance of a gadol coming on a katana?
On a katana less than 3 years old.
Yeah.
Less than 3 years old. That's what we've got. Our gadol is on a katana.
What would be the circumstances that would permit something like that to happen? Are we talking about an anusa? Are we talking about...
You understand what... what Sol is asking. Now, you know, I just want to tell you something. Many, many years ago, when I was learning, I came across a Gemara, and it wasn't the first time I came across those Gemaras. I might give you more examples. I came across a Gemara once where it spoke about a woman going into a bath in which a man had been before and he had lost seed, and this semen went into the woman and she became pregnant. Now, I thought, good heavens. What the Kenestrach little did I think, and this was before, you know, this was the first time that I'd ever been faced with it. I get a Shiloh one day, a couple come and see me about artificial insemination. So where do I go? I go straight to that Gemara. There, I worked it out from that Gemara. And it was, there was nothing had been written on the subject, nothing at all. And it was a question I couldn't play about with these people. There I got my, and I worked on it, I worked a couple of days and I called them back. And afterwards, when Shilas and Shivas were written on it already, I had my notes and everything. I've gone through everything. I haven't missed a thing. Just gone through everything. Where did I? And from there, there were references. There was a Tosus. There was a Rishon there. And then there was a Rosh there. And then afterwards, I found something in Yeridah. And Yeridah spoke about sheets. It was sheets. It didn't speak about. I got it all. Just from that little piece of Gemara, I got it all. When I studied that piece of Gemara, the whole thing was, it was just theoretical. But from that, I was able afterwards to work it all out. That's one example. That is as far as Aloch is concerned. I'll give you another example from to which I refer from time to time, and I might even refer to it in the latter part, in the last part, in the third part of the Shia today. The Gemara says that in the Ikvas of the Mashiach, that is the time through which we are living now. But when I was a young man, it wasn't Ikvas of the Mashiach yet. Ikvas of the Mashiach means that you can hear the footsteps of the Mashiach already. You can hear the footsteps. You can hear the footsteps of him. See, he's coming. It wasn't that time yet. It wasn't that time yet. And I learned that there will be no place in the world where it will be safe to live. Now, and I thought to myself, no place in the world means, and I come from South Africa, if you please, which was even further away than California. South Africa. Who worries about South Africa in those days? I was dealing with people that had never heard about South Africa. The furthest south that they'd ever heard of was Egypt. They'd never heard of anything south of anything. I mean, how could it be that the Gemara was Tavish, that there will be no place where it will be safe? I'd already passed the stage where I said it means it metaphorically. I'd already passed that stage that there's no such thing as metaphorically in the Talmud, in the Torah. There's no such thing as symbolic in the Torah. There isn't such a thing. I passed that stage already, so I just couldn't understand it. Today, you think, I've got to think twice about understanding. What went wrong? I thought only in terms of infantry warfare, tank warfare. That's as far as I could think. Perhaps a bit of airplane warfare. That's as far as I could I think of these missiles that you sit in your office and you press a button and you destroy a world? Could I have thought of anything like that? So, shouldn't I have learnt it at all? Should I have just discarded it, taken a big black pencil and that this doesn't apply. She wrote, you don't know about these things, but it's Torah. And Torah is applicable. You don't know when you're going to apply it. And from one thing you understand another thing, but that is Torah. Am I making myself clear? I've given you two examples that happened to me. Two examples. That when I learnt it, it was only that when I learnt it, I had already reached a stage. Don't forget, I came very early under the influence of my uncle, who just opened up the world to me. I just knew that it was so. That is what is Agodu Shebu Alaktan. Of course, it's funny, Agodu Shebu Alaktan. But that is the position. All right, can we go on?
I suppose so. My question really was more of a technical question.
Yes.
As to what would the status be of...
of the Kitano?
Of the Godel as well. In other words, wouldn't he... there could be two cases in such a situation,
yes,
that he either had the father's permission or he did not.
Well, look here, you know, I mean, it can speak about... it can speak about a goy. Speak about a goy who came on a katano. I mean, these things, you know, I heard things since I'm here in California that I couldn't believe that they, I couldn't believe a thing like that. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that men would have an association with animals. I couldn't believe anything like that. And how did it come out? I made a remark once. I said, of course, you know, it says in the Torah, what happens to a person? I said, of course, we can't imagine anything like this. So somebody at this premise said, what do you mean we can't imagine it? Even in Achai, I always translated it cruelty to animals. Oh, I forgot that. For my purpose, cruelty to animals was enough. Once somebody was sitting and he said, does it really mean cruelty to animals? Isn't there another term, Tzar Barachai? I said, you are absolutely right. Abram and Achai isn't cruelty to animals. But rather than going into all the details, I said, well, what exactly is it? I said, it is taking meat and cutting it out of a live animal and not killing the animal first. I said, but nobody would. And why do they do it? Because the meat tastes better. Gehetha Maisa. To do a thing like that because the meat tastes better. I could never understand a thing like that. But evidently it is. There are these things taking place. All right. That, unfortunately, this is, you know, I can't, my mind can't grasp a thing like this. Such an aberration. But these things are evidently going on. Right. Hagodo Sheboa Lakhtan Vakotan Sheboa Lakdolu Mukas Aitkus Ubotan Mosayim Divre Rabbi Meir Vachachomim Omrim. And the Chachomim say, Mukas Aitz Kisuboso Mono. The Chachomim say that the Mukas Aitz, her Kisubi is 100. Which is very difficult for us to understand. Because after all, there wasn't an association with a man. The only thing is why Mukas Aitz is worse than the first two Gok, Agol Sheboal Aktan and Akotan Sheboal Akdolo. Because in case one and in case two, the Sulim are there. And in case three, there are no Basuri.
So there's a doubt that something that she really wasn't
in fact. We're not dealing with the doubt yet. That comes much later. We won't even get as far as that today. That comes much later where you've got a case. He says to her, you are a Ba'ula, and she says, no, I'm a Mukasai. We should do so.
That already. We've had that already.
Huh? He was not quite there. She didn't quite say he was not there.
Right.
We hadn't attached for us, but yes.
Could you explain the difference between Rabbi Meir and the...
Chachomim. At this stage, you see, in the Gemara, there's going to come out, the difference is going to be not quite the same as yet. At the moment, it works out like this. We're dealing in the ratio of the Mishnah. In the first part of the Mishnah, we are dealing with three cases. We are dealing with a Godel Shebo Alaktan, case number...
Let me restate my question. Yes. I don't mean in this context, but I mean in a historical context. Who were these people?
George, I didn't realize what you were asking. The Rabbi Meir and... let me explain. Rabbi Meir...
They're in the same time.
They were contemporaneous. You see, we are dealing in the Mishnah, we are dealing with a period which covers approximately 200 years. That is from the year 0 till the year 200. It might be 30 BCE, 40 BCE to 190, but those are the... Rabbi Meir falls into the second century, but pretty early. He was the teacher of Rabbi Akiva. So pretty early, you see, early in the second century. The Chachomim are a group who opposed him, and since they are a group, their names aren't mentioned. But we just know that they are a group of contemporaries, George, a group of contemporaries who opposed him.
If they opposed him in this case, not necessarily in
every case. Not necessarily. Just in this case they opposed.
It's very rare that we, it's almost never that we have Havachat for Rabbi Meir. He was considered one of the Zoheya Dorot.
You see, there's another thing that you've got to know. Somebody told me something, the way they work things. I don't quite remember the expressions he used. The important thing he said in business, he says the important thing is whether you win or you lose. That's the important thing. They're not interested whether it's right or wrong. What do you say? It's not how you play the game. It's whether you win or this is. When did he tell me this? I think he told me this morning. He said it doesn't matter how you play the game. It's whether you win or you lose. Now, in Torah, it's exactly the verse as it is with the... I'm beginning to think as it is with everything. In Torah, it's exactly the reverse. It doesn't matter whether you win or lose. It's how you play the game. That's the important thing. It just doesn't matter whether you win or lose. That Beis Shammai is always losing just doesn't matter. It doesn't mean to say that they're wrong. We don't say it just doesn't matter. And you can be quite sure that Shammai was passionately fond of Beis Hillel. And you can be quite sure that Rabbi Meir was passionately fond of the Chachomim.
Yes, that I'm sure. The question is, why were his ideas in general not accepted?
Well, there are various reasons. Why weren't Beis Shammai's ideas in general?
They tended toward Kumbra more than Beis Hillel.
That's not the reason why. Mm-hmm. You see, that's not the reason why. That's not the reason why. One of the reasons, and this is, you've got to understand Torah, one of the reasons is that when Beit Hillel spoke about Beit Shammai and themselves, they always mentioned Beit Shammai first. That is one of the reasons why. Because there is a Gemara that when Moshiach comes, most of it will be like Beit Shammai. So it's not whether you are right or wrong, it's how you play the game. The game that Beis Hillel played was whenever they mentioned Beis Hillel first. But Beit Shammai first. You mentioned Beit Shammai first. Then you play the game. That's a new word. It's a different world altogether. And what we are trying to do at this year is to gain an entry into this world, and this becomes our world. And you've got to make up which is the real world, which is reality. And this is reality. But that is a very good example. Thank you very much, Professor Eviat. This is a good example. You follow what it
I
is?
I understand it. It is nebulously. I think
it's not because base here makes it it's Nakula. Make it easier so we pass through our base. It's not the reason. We are not afraid to make it harder. Not afraid to make it harder. You know, I don't know. This shear, one of the reasons of the shear is to bring you into the stellar world, and every time I feel that I've brought you a step nearer into the stellar world, that is my satisfaction that I get. Can you understand this? Excuse me, just one moment. I'm sorry. I'll come back to you. I just want to try and explain something else to you. And please don't misunderstand me about this. There is in Wissenschaftes Judentums, or in Judaism, you know, lots of books are written on Judaism. There was a book that was written on Judaism, on Rabbi Akiva. Two volumes. Man writes two volumes on Rabbi Akiva. So he works out that the reason why Rabbi Akiva said what he said was because Rabbi Akiva was a poor man and his opponent was a rich man. So Rabbi Akiva says, because he's poor, these are the conclusions he comes to. Now, that is unheard of in Torah. Unheard of in Torah. It might be possible sociology, but it's atrocious Torah. It just holds no water in Torah. You can't work that way. Another way is that Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, we paskin like Beis Hillel because Beis Hillel takes the light of you, so we take the light of you. We don't work that way. There's another thing that is done, and I've discussed this with you on a previous occasion some considerable time back. The Ksav that we use is Kesav Ashuris. Now, Ashuris doesn't mean it's Assyrian, because the Assyrians never had this Kesav. Kesav is script. Assyrians never had this. They've got a cuneiform. They never had this Kesav. But it's called Kesav Ashuris. It's a Kesav of happiness. That's why it's called Kesav Ashuris. Now, there is a theory that the Torah was given in an ancient script, and we changed, and Ezra changed it to this script. You've heard of that theory.
You see, everything that's been dug up that's contemporaneous, that's older than Ezra, is written, and we know that script.
It's written 5 years. It's right. So, then why did Ezra change the script? Because they say the other script was too difficult. Can you imagine? Too difficult. Can you imagine? We don't put punctuation in the Gemara. It'll be too easy, you see. Don't put punctuation. It'll be too difficult. Is that the reason that as ksav that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu on Har Sinai? Can we imagine the kedusha that is in it? That we will say no. We're not going to use. It's too difficult. We're going to use from Goyim. We're going to use the ksav. I mean, can we imagine doing a thing like that? It's altogether a different thing. The original ksav in which the Torah was given was this ksav. After the Chet HaEgel, they were not allowed to use this ksav of the golden calf. After the sin of the golden calf, they were not allowed to use this ksav. They weren't up to it. You defiled yourselves and you'd contaminated yourselves, and you're still going to use this? Those same eyes that saw the golden calf are going to gaze onto this script that you can't do. You have another script. The time of Ezra was one of the greatest periods in our history. There were twice when it was touch and go, three times when it was touch and go that Mashiach will come. And one of the times that was touch and go that Mashiach would come was in the times of Ezra. Ezra brought the Kassav back again. That was about 444 BCE. I say 444 BCE because it makes it easier for me. It might have been 443, it might have been 442. But it's near enough, you see. 444 BCE. But as Professor Yaka rightly said, but after Ezra's time, we've got coins that have still got the other kassavs. Coins have got it. Why? They said, coins. For that, we are not going to use this kassav for that. For that, they used the other kassavs. That was much later. There was still that kassav, they used it. But they used that script, they used it for, you want to make money, don't use this to make money. And afterwards when we started writing Mishnah and Gemara, we still didn't use exactly the same ksav that is in the Torah. And that is why I am opposed to wedding invitations in which they use a ksav of the Torah to write it. It's not right. You don't use that ksav. You use this ksav. You think it's a big chokhmah. You know what a chokhmah is. It's a big act of wisdom to write a wedding invitation. You don't do it. I once saw a piece of Gemara taken out and a person's photograph put in it. Photographs. One doesn't do a thing like that, you see. Well, one just doesn't do a thing like that. One doesn't do a thing like that.
I can imagine what sort of you know door that person was.
But he doesn't know. But he doesn't know. You see, I mean, it can interrogate. One can't do a thing like that. Look, a Rashi doesn't use the same script as the Gemara. How can he use it? The Gemara. The Gemara doesn't use exactly the same script as the Torah. Rashi doesn't use the same script as the Gemara. He's afraid to use this script. Changes it. So it shouldn't be that it's afraid to come there. I told you the story that I was once in Yerushalayim, not in Tveria, and some people were going up to the Rambam's cave. They wanted me to go up. I said, no, me. What kind of an Orthodox Jew is that? He doesn't want to go to the Rambam's cave. I said, I'm not really Orthodox, which they don't understand. after a little while, they said, now tell us, why don't you? I said, I am afraid. So there was one man standing there, huge, you know. He was an American. and you know, you've got to be careful because that was the impression that I was left of Americans. He said, I'm not afraid. I said, it won't do you any harm. You don't have to be afraid. I'm going to be afraid. You don't have to be afraid. You see, it's, what it is, the, when you're dealing with these things, I could never bring myself to go and see the Belleville Brisker. And his son, now I'm on very, very close terms with his son. And his son said to me something about his father. He said, you know, you knew my father. I said, well, I'd never seen him. He said, but you were in Yerushalayim when my father was alive. I said, yes. He said, you mean to say you didn't ever go up to see my father? I said, no. He said, why not? He said, I was afraid. So being in that, just couldn't believe myself. He said, you should have gone. So I didn't go. I was afraid to go. So you can't say that you know, when you're dealing with these people, you're dealing with Rabbi Meir, Beis Shammah, Beis Hillel. So Beis Hillel, I know books are written to try and prove that Mifas can be called like Beis Hillel in Judaism, that because they, it's a lighter, which shows that it, which, I mean, pardon,
more humane,
yes, it's more humane, they understand better, so there's no question. It's not the reason. The Gemara says, the reason is because when they spoke about the Shammai and themselves, they never said we and they, but they said they and we. They never said we, Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. They said Beit Shammai and we Beis Hillel. They put Beit Shammai first. That is the reason.
Beit Shammai put themselves first when they spoke?
No.
No.
They did. No, they didn't. I'm sorry. I thought you meant well. No. Yes, they did. Yes,
well, I mean, the word that they had the fault of arrogance in a certain.
Well, extent. It's you know, it's not really arrogance. For example, I have to battle when I write a Hebrew letter whether to put Ishti ba'ani or put ani ve'ishti. In English, I've got no difficulty. I put my wife and I. I want to know whether in Hebrew that would be pedantry. Yes, because you already write. You see, you already write a modern style. You see, a more secular, more modern style, which I don't. I just can't. I haven't been trained that way. You see, to me, it's a big. I've got to struggle. In English, I write my wife and I. There's just no question. But in Hebrew, that's just not the way it's written. And usually I just decide to whom I'm writing, you see. If I'm writing to a person who won't understand it, all right. But if I write to a person who will understand it, I put Ishti Vani. It's, the deen is to be Mechabit Ishti Yose Migufo. Yose Migufo means I've got to be Mechabit my wife more than me. So if I write to a Talmid Chochem, he knows what I'm doing. He knows why I'm doing that. So it's possible they could regard themselves as old or something like that, but they didn't do it. They didn't do it. But it's interesting that the Gemara should give that. So it's not a question of who is right or who is wrong. It's a question of how you play the game. That is the whole question.
I was told once by a teacher, but Rabbi teacher said the problem with Rabbi Meir.
Yes.
He says. Lo yardu the sof dato. He was not fully understood
that,
by the by contemporary.
Very good. That
and
can
that
be
is why this, the halacha does not go to him.
That
they didn't.
That can very easily be. That can very easily be. That but it's like this. We understand what you say, but we can't go down to that depth. We can't go down to that level. We can understand it, but we can't go down to that level. For you, it's all right. But for us, it's not all right. That is absolutely acceptable.
Who we? Who decides which way?
Just about one moment.
Michael. I don't want to prolong.
That's all right.
But I think that part of what I think is I can presume to speak for Dr. Flesch.
Yes.
Speaking about both he and I think also Phil Silverman, recently heard two very entertaining and seemingly very intelligent lectures, which explained at great length how Rabbi Hillel was a bold innovator.
Yes.
And a legislator who, in his own era...
Did you say it was entertaining or amusing?
A little bit of both. And very intelligent with looking at Agadah and the Gemara. Really what Rabbi Hillel, the reason we remember him as such a great Jew is because he was the first one who really saw that you had to change the existing halacha for the sake of tikkun olam, using a very, very broad brush indeed, and if necessary, disregarding what came before. And the implication, though not being drawn, being fairly clear that the problem with Orthodox people today, etc., etc. But, you know, you hear something, and the point is it really makes the personality of Rabbi Hillel with the... You heard the lectures too, didn't you, Phil? Yeah. It really makes the personality of Rabbi Hillel seem very vivid.
Yes.
And, you know, there's... it's such a completely different way of approaching Torah than
of
we're
doing. Of course it is. I'll give you another example. This happened to me in South Africa, where it was a question of, every now and then it comes up where a lay body wants to make a decision and the rabbinate says, or the responsible section of the rabbinate says, you can't make this decision. This is a halachic question and you can't do it. And you see, unfortunately, I can understand how difficult these people have in following this. If you take a country like America, and the same is all over the world, if you take a country like America, who is it who administers the law? Well, administers the law. Who makes the decisions with regard to law? Who is it?
The court.
The Supreme Court.
Mm.
Who is it who legislates?
Congress.
Who are the great authorities on law?
Justices.
The Supreme Court. They are the great. But who legislates? Congress legislates. Now, we haven't got anything like that. We don't work like that. So you're up against it all the time. We don't work like that. We say Congress can't legislate because they don't know what the law is. So the judges say, you know, you may be right. You may be right in your contention, but we are not here to legislate. We are here only to administer the law. So we can only go, we've got to look at the book, and that's all we can do. With Torah, it doesn't work like that. It's the great authorities that do it, so I can understand that sometimes the layman can't understand why it is that a lay body cannot decide the law. That the Federation of the Federations, is there such a thing as a Federation? Why can't the Federation of the Federations decide what it's got to be, that this is what it's going to be? That this year you've got to have Yom HaAtzmaut, that this year you've got to have it right in the middle of the Sfira period. That we've got to celebrate something greater than in the 9 days. Great, something greater than we've got to celebrate in the 9 days. Why can't we do it? They can't understand it. So, once with a rabbi, he was an Orthodox rabbi, made a statement and wrote articles, brought a proof from the Gemara, that we have to go according to we've got to take into consideration the majority in these matters. What is the proof from Gemara? Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana was a Kohen, as his name suggests. Rav Kahana said, no, I'm sorry, it was Rav Kahana, but he wasn't a Kohen. Rav Kahana, I think it was Rav Kahana, I'm not sure now. No, it was Rav Yosef. I'm sorry, it wasn't Rav Kahana, it was Rav Yosef. Rav Kahana is a Kohen. It was Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef said, I am not a Kohen. Yet, were my colleagues to say to me, go up and duchen, I would go up and duchen. And for a Kohen not to duchen, for a Kohen to duchen, for a person who's not a Kohen to duchen, is a very serious breach, is a very serious matter. So he brought this as a proof, here you are. Look what Rav Yosef says, if my colleagues would have told me, you listen to them and they tell you that you've got to do it, that becomes the law. The person doesn't understand it. What it says there, the whole Gemara is to prove Rav Yosef says, I've got so much confidence in my colleagues that I know I'm not a Kohen, and were they to tell me to go up to Duchen, I would be certain that they had discovered that I was a Kohen, and I would go up to Duchen. That is the confidence I've got in them. But it doesn't mean that you go and listen to do something wrong. You follow. So this is over and over again you've got this sort of thing. And we're coming back to this point of the machlokus of Rabbi Meir and Chachomi. The machlokus is always in shitos, in theses, in theories, but it's not because... It's very difficult to explain it to anyone that hasn't been initiated into this whole world of the Torah. I had a person visiting me from Israel a little while ago. He was here. He was in this community too. An awfully fine person and a very frum person. Hasn't been initiated in Torah. And he said something to me, wanted to ask me what I felt. He wanted to explain something also with Rabbi Akiva. And I said, no, you can't do that. I mean, what you are doing is you're making a person who is subject to the lowest form of subjectivity, he can't get out of himself. So he said, but these people were human. I said to him, you know, the trouble is that today you don't see anybody like that anymore. By our ideas, what we are, if we compare those people to ourselves, they weren't human. They weren't human. And this is a world that one has to understand it, with whom it is that we are dealing. But there you've got a very good example. We Paskin like Beit Shila because they put Beit Shammah before they put themselves. And of course I've got to, I don't have to tell you this, that when they put Beit Shammah before they put themselves, they didn't do so that they should be considered, that should be a considered a point in their favor when they decided they were going to who it is. That was the way they worked it. That's the way they worked it. And we'll have an example of that a little bit later in the Shia. Yes?
This, perhaps it comes up in the Lord, but specifically on this Mishnah, the Lukat 8 says, does the Chatan know that the woman is in Lukat 8?
That comes in very early in the Gemara already. Very early in the Gemara. I mean, if he knows that she is a Lukat Eitz, then there's no question about it, you see. The whole question really is, if he doesn't know she's a Lukat Eitz, and he finds out to her that she's a Lukat Eitz, whether he can be mafsi de kesuba, whether he can make her lose a kesuba. Then Rabbi Meir says he can't, she gets a full kesuba for Sayyid, and the Chachomim says she's lachatchila only entitled to 100. But that the Gemara will discuss afterwards.
In other words, we have to bring down the proof that she has to prove whether or not she's a mukat case.
Well, we're not coming to that yet. We're going to come to that later, where he says that you are the bu'ulo, and she says, no, I'm a mukas eight. That is, that Gemara is a little bit further down. Yeah, is all that whole Gemara. He omer is mukas eight, and even who omer loki eladrusas isha. She says, I'm a mukas eight. I haven't got pursuing you right, but I'm a mukas eight. And he says, you haven't got pursuing, but that is because a man has lived with you. And then the whole question goes, we'll have to come to that Gemara. Right. I just want to be sure, George's, we covered your ground.
Fine.
You've got yours. Professor Evia Fowles, we've covered your ground. This is you see, of course, I want to tell you one thing. It's only because we are sitting around here, we are a group of people, and please don't misunderstand what I'm saying, because I'm dealing with people who have got not only intelligence, but have got midas, got character, that one can speak like this. If you are speaking to people who are, even if they are intelligent, but if they haven't got any mirrors, if they haven't got any character, I could never speak to them, I would never accept it. They've got their own ideas. Got their own ideas, you can't those lectures that you heard probably, you can't argue against, you know. They don't want to. For this, you've got to have mirrors, you've got to have, otherwise it can't work. To come into a Torah world, got to have the midas. See, this is a different word altogether. You've got to have midas to understand that the deciding factor in Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai, can you follow what went on? You've got the Dodgers, and what do you call those other creatures? The Yankees. The Dodgers and the Yankees. The money that goes, can you imagine the Dodgers and the Yankees, what goes on, huh? Can you imagine what went on by Chama and by Sila? You've got to try and understand what it is. What went on by Chama and by Sila? Come to a conclusion. The law is like by Sila. There is more midas there. More midas. That's so the law is like Basilea. Okay? This is the world that I and my son, each in our own way, are trying to introduce people to, with whom there is no question that it is worthwhile. It's worth everything. No question about it. This is that type of world. And I can only tell you that when you get into this type of world, and when you are in it, you are living in a world where there is meaning. It's only there that there is the real happiness. What happiness there is when you are in this world. And all that we discuss is to bring you a little bit into each time, another step nearer, a little bit closer into it all. This is the world. I don't expect you to shut yourself out from the world that is round about you. your living is made from the world that is round about you. I don't expect you to shut yourself out of the world that is round about you, even socially. I don't expect that. This world is, at the moment, such a small world and such, I'm speaking narrow, not in ideology, but narrow in in numbers, that you can't, I can understand that you couldn't fulfill yourself in it. But that is only the negative reason. There's a positive reason why I expect you to be in the outside world also. There's a positive reason. And this has got to do with his Galus Hashem. And that is, do you know what it means when you are in the outside world and you behave like a Ben Torah, where it is not whether you win or lose that matters, but it's how you play the game. Do you know what that means? And the person sees it, that is a Torah Jew. That is Torah. That is Hashem. Do you know what that means? And you've got the opportunity of doing it. That's his Galus Hashem is here. Now I'm afraid we've just got to move onwards now. And now comes the second part of the Mishnah, the Sulo Almona Gerusho Vachalutso, that is an Almona, a Gerusho or a Chlutso that is a Vesulo Miranasuin, but from the marriage, Kusubosom Mono, their Kusubo is 100. No. This is the second part of the Mishnah. The Mishnah falls into three parts. It's possible. It's possible that if you look at the Mishnayos, we haven't got a Mishnayos here, have we? No. It's possible that the Mishnayos divides it even more. It divides it into three. That could be. Now you're speaking about a basula, but she's an almono, or she's a grush, or she's a chlutzo from Nisuin. Then kesubosan mono. There the kesuba is mono. Now it says she's a basula, so we know that she is a basula, but we, as I explained to you when you forced me into a position I had to speak about to you about these things before we were ready for it, that the way we work, that is her chazoka. Once she is a nesua, she's under a chazoka that she is a be'ula. The Abraham time is the suni. And therefore, if the husband says that Pesach Pesuach Motsosi, he's got no time as pesulim, and she gets the full. She gets 100. He can't say she shouldn't even get 100. And now the third part of the Mishnah, and these are not. This isn't strange to you, because it is the contrast of the previous two Mishnahs. Hagyuris Vashvuyo Vashivcho. The converted woman, the captured woman, or the female slave, Shenivtu Vishnizgayru Vishnishtachruru, who were redeemed, who were converted, or who were freed, given their freedom, Yeseiros Arbona Sholoshoni V'yom Echot, after they were 3 years old, and the day, Kusuboson mono ve'ein lohen tainus v'suli. Their kusubi is only 100, because we are working on the assumption that they are be'ulos, that they are not besulos, and therefore because the nesuin has taken place, therefore their kusubi is only 100. And that is the Mishnah. Yes?
Two questions on that. Why do we have to learn this Mishnah? It would seem like it would be obvious from the previous one.
Yes.
And two, it should say perhaps
this technical point, more than 3 years, rather than 3 years and 1 day. What's the case of a girl that's exactly 3 years and 1 day? One said less than 3 years and 1 day, and one said more than 3 years and 1 day. So you're left with what's the status of a girl 3 years and 1 day?
Yes. Exactly. Actually, the 3 years, I don't want to explain that to you. I'm going to ask you another question. The deal is that a boy who turns 13 years old can read the Torah, and he's reading it on my behalf. I'm not speaking about the Maftir. A Maftir, a child can read, provided the Maftir is the repetition of the Sedra. But for the seven people who are called up to the reading of the Torah, the boy must be bar mitzvah. What happens if he was born at 1 p.m. on the day which, when he turns 13, falls on the Shabbos? Can he read the Torah? Because the Torah is going to be read at 10 o'clock. And he's going to be bar mitzvah, he's going to be 13 years old. He's going to be 13 years old at 1 o'clock. So we are 3 hours short here. Can he read or can't he read?
Is that what we say, a year and a day?
He can read.
No. Are you pardon?
He can read.
So how do we do? But he's not 13.
Counts a day as a day.
So, well, that's quite right. So we counted from the Friday night. You follow?
Yes.
So the day that he turns 13, that is on the Friday night. Thank you, Abdul. So on that Friday night he's 13. So on the day that she becomes 3 years old, that is the moment. You just have to argue, you've got to work it out some set of data, all right, but that is the moment. So that's not a question. But you asking a question, you're asking a question, why is it necessary to have the converse? Why is it necessary to have the converse? I think it will come up when we do the Gemara and we see the possibilities that arise here. There's certain possibilities that arise. That is as far as that is concerned. Yes, Phil.
Does Nisuin include Yichud?
Yes. Nisuin includes Yichud. There's got to be Yichud for Nisuin.
So if everything of the process is completed up till the point of Yichud, and the groom, heaven forbid, should drop dead at that moment,
yes,
which he'd be entitled
to. But that's not
to
suing.
That's not suing.
You see, there's a big question on whether even that is nisuin. But we take that the Yichud, we take that is nisuin. In the Gemara there was a view that even that isn't a suit, but we take it that is already a suit, and the Mishnah works along that basis. Now the Rashi, please. Habo ala ketana pechus mibashol eshonim b'mibashol eshein b'yosav diyo. Habo ala ketano. Stuart, do you know where the Rashi is?
No,
I don't. The Rashi is always two inside columns. If we just take this with you, Habo alaktana, pechus mibash sholeh she'ein biyosav biyo, if one comes on a katana who is less than 3 years old, whose biyo is not a biyo, she'harei besuleh ha'chosrim, because of the sulim return.
What's that mean,
it's
a biyo, it's
not a biyo? The act is not an act. She ain't be also beer. It's not a proper beer because the basuni will return. If it would be a proper beer, the basuni wouldn't return. You follow? So this is not regarded as a proper beer. The cotton and the cotton, pochus mi ben teisha, who is less than 9 years old. She omru chachomim. The chachomim said, ain't be also beer. That his beer is not a beer. Uvo ala gedelo, and he comes on a grown up woman. He comes, and yes, umuga says now it works out from the Gemara. It works out that if he's less than 9 years old, his bio won't rupture the basur. Umukas eitz. She nitka lo eitz be'osa morkom. That she was hurt with a piece of wood in that proper that place. She nitka means that she was penetrated by a piece of wood in that particular place. But now we know already what a mukas etz is. A mukas etz can come from falling. It can also be a case of mukas etz. Kusubosim mosaim, the kusubi is 200. Im nosu u, yeah, this is the point that I should have made, that Michael asked me about. Im nosu u, im nise u le ish. If they are married to a man, achre came afterwards, that after these things happen, lo obdu bekakes kusuboson. They do not lose their kusubo im nosu stam. If they married normally, will appear a shlok klum, and the husband didn't say anything.